welcome to a new episode of Patrick and Selena versus Evil, the podcast. I'm Patrick here in New Jersey, where it is not snowing, but it is raining. And out on the West Coast is Selena.
Hello. It is neither snowing nor raining. It was a lovely, 80 degrees today? I think I got a sunburn.
You're actually reminding me, in high school, I used to play baseball with this guy, and every time he pitched, there was a storm. And then he got nicknamed Storm, which he didn't like. But it reminds me, like, every time we try to do a podcast now, we're getting a blizzard, a snowstorm, an ice storm, or now rain.
Yeah, yeah. That's all you, because we're gorgeous out here.
So today's episode is Patrick and Selena versus The Walking Dead Season 6, Part 1, the first half.
Yeah!
And I know we're recording it after the premiere of the second half of the episode, but we're going to focus mainly on the first half.
Yes.
Even though I'm assuming, Selena, you've seen the
episode? Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
My God, so
bad. So we can touch. Touch on that.
I have feelings.
So before we get into our little opening segment, there's already some great memes. Am I pronouncing that right? Memes?
Yes.
Okay. There's already a great meme about Carl.
Okay, wait. Hold on. If you have not watched the first half of season 6 of The Walking Dead, go back now. If you haven't seen the... ninth episode of season 6, like the mid-season premiere of season 6, pause, because this is your one and only spoiler alert, because it is spoilerific. So many spoilers and theories and spoilers and thoughts and spoilers and feelings and references and spoilers. You can't bitch now because you've been warned.
Exactly. So the meme is Rick talking to Denise, who's the doctor surgeon, and Denise refers to Carl as Arl. So you see where this is going. And Rick goes,
"It's
because you can't see." And the end picture is Rick saying, "Don't do this now."
Yeah, that did not, unfortunately, go the way that I wanted to. I had, again, as we say a lot of times, I lost track of the comics way before the show even came out, and I have not gotten caught up. But I know, because I informed myself, as to where the comics are, and I had honestly forgotten about... Well, I knew Carl got shot. I'd forgotten about losing the eye. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that they would go there. But
in the comics, he gets shot by the mayor, whatever you want to call that person, of Alexandria, which is not, what's her name, Deanna?
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, it's a male.
Yeah.
So they changed it for the TV show. But in the comics, he's the one who ends up shooting Carl.
Yeah. Yeah. I had, and we will get to this in the episode, that I have notes. I have so many notes. nobody will, she's never going to hear this, but... Yvette Nicole Brown is she was an actress in Community. She's, there was the new, The Odd Couple, I think, that she's on now. She's a super Walking Dead fan. She's on The Talking Dead all the time. I follow her on Twitter. And, I think that we would be awesome, Walking Dead buddies, because we both hit on the same things and take crazy notes and whatnot. So, I'll get into what I wanted to happen between Carl and Ron and moan that it didn't happen. But I'm glad Son of Porch Dick is gone. I'm honestly glad the entire Porch Dick line has been snuffed.
Yes, they are all gone. But that is a topic for later in our podcast.
Okay.
So we're going to catch up. We have some news to catch up on, some things that have happened since not only just from our last podcast, but from the podcast before that. The last recording we did, we were touching on the X-Files, all 9 seasons. So there was so much to go. We just kind of bypassed any news that had come up. So the first thing is, I'm sure everyone who follows horror movies knows by now, J.J. Abrams and Bad Robot have done a restoration of Phantasm, the original Phantasm. And they've announced they're premiering it at, I believe, South by Southwest Film Festival, which means we are closer than ever to finally seeing Phantasm V Ravager.
Yeah.
Finally. Which will be obviously the last movie of the Tall Man.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see this movie's been done, it seems like, for a couple of years now, so that it's finally appears to be getting shown to the public at some point in 2016. Is great news to me as a longtime Phantasm fan.
Yes.
And next up, which we haven't talked about since I think the series started, was Ash vs. Evil Dead on Stars is now complete. First season over.
Has it been renewed?
They are doing a second season, and I believe they are filming the second season right now.
Fantastic! I'm still a math slacker and have not seen it because I've been diligently doing math all of the time.
I think the second season is premiering around the same time the first season did, which is close to Halloween. So we'll do an episode before that starts up where we'll go over in more depth the first season of Ash vs. the Evil Dead. I did happen to see the entire season.
You didn't happen to see it. You made it a point to see it.
I made it a point to see it.
You're a much better podcast host than I am.
But overall, without getting into any details, it had a lot of ups and downs. The first episode, which was directed by Sam Raimi, was fantastic. The second episode, not directed by Sam Raimi, was clearly not directed by Sam Raimi. It was like a real drop in quality and energy. And then it kind of went up. Like some episodes were pretty good. Others were just like, eh. But by the end, it kind of redeemed itself. Like the last two episodes were fantastic. Bruce Campbell, through the entire thing, nailed it as Ash. I think one of the positives that came out of it was the introduction of different demons that the Necronomicon calls forth. Not just deadites who infect humans. And they turn into like the kind of cackling deadites that we know.
Yeah.
So I think first season had quite a few rough spots, but overall, pretty positive coming out of it. So I'm glad there's a second season and kind of happy to see where they're going. They just announced they're bringing in Ash's father for season two.
All right.
But I can't remember who they cast. I know. Dean Majors, the $6 million man, will be Ash's father.
You don't understand. Like, I didn't watch The $6 Million Man. That was a little bit before my time. Mm-hmm. The Fall Guy.
The Fall Guy, yeah.
I think just out of pure nostalgia, the Fall Guy music might be our outro for this because the Fall Guy. I had a Fall Guy action figure that I took a bath with when I was little, like every week. Well, I bathed more than once a week, but he lived at my grandma's house and I had to take a bath before Sunday for church. And mm-hmm. He was one of my bath toys.
That's
wild. As was what's his name? The Face from the A-Team?
Yes, Face. Dirk Benedict.
I got hand-me-down toys from my older male cousins, so there weren't a lot of Barbies in my bath.
I didn't even know that there was Fall Guy toys, so that you had an action figure of the Fall Guy.
I will post it on Facebook, and I will post a picture of it on our Twitter as well. I don't still have the action figure, but I will find a picture of the action figure that I bathed with once a week.
And it will be so clean.
Yeah, it was innocent, people. It was innocent. I was a child. He was the Fall Guy.
Okay, so moving on, because we're going somewhere. I don't think we have time to discuss all the implications of this story. Actually, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about the new X-Files episodes, which I have watched the first five, and there's only one left, which will be airing the day after our recording today. And again, kind of like Ash versus Evil Dead, a little bit of ups and downs. The first episode is very exposition heavy, so a lot of people have kind of hated on it, but it gives you an introduction into the conspiracy, and they're focusing less on the alien colonization and more on the fact that humans have been tested and kidnapped by men, the cabal of men, who are using alien technology to create an alien-human hybrid. Now, some people have been online complaining that they're changing all the history of the X-Files by going this way. But that's not the case. If you go watch the old episodes, while there are alien bounty hunters in our spaceships, and there is talk of a plan of colonization, a lot of the conspiracy episodes are actually just the men in the cabal, in the syndicate, experimenting on human beings, not the aliens experimenting on humans. Yeah. So I think this does fall into a lot of where they were going in episode 9.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where they go with this final episode. They haven't done a real mythology episode since the first episode of the Mecha series. And they're reintroducing the cigarette smoking man in a much bigger role. I'm not exactly happy that he's back. I kind of hope they would move on from the cigarette smoking man. Yeah. Even though I like him as a character, he's kind of like, to me, a little bit of the Glenn now. Like, what does it take to kill the dude?
Yeah.
Like, last time we saw him in season 9, he was getting shot by helicopter rockets and blown up, and now he's back.
Yeah.
It seems a little like, I don't know. I understand you're trying to reboot a series or reboot interest in the X-Files, but sometimes you have to let go of some things to move forward.
Yeah. I think that the cigarette smoking man definitely could have been let go of easily.
Yeah, and it's not like I love the actor, William B. Davis. I love his voice. I think he has the best, like, evil douchebag voice.
Yes.
But I think the character itself may have run its course. But I could be wrong. We'll find out Monday night when season 6 airs.
Or the last episode airs.
The last episode. And now the moment I've been waiting for. I'm going to spring some news on Selena, which I don't know if she's heard this or not. She may have. It's been starting to make the rounds.
He asked me before in the little pre-show meeting we had, he asked me if he should prep me or if he should spring it on me, and I said spring it on me, so I'm prepared.
So Heather Langenkamp, who is famous obviously for Nightmare on Elm Street, did an interview where she revealed that she is working on a Hellraiser movie. This was found out because Doug Bradley had to make a post on Facebook about said Hellraiser movie, which apparently no one knew was being made until Doug Bradley made a Hellraiser or a Facebook post about Hellraiser to announce that he was not participating in said Hellraiser movie, and neither was Clive Barker. And the reason was he was sent the script for this particular movie, and he was told that if he read the script, he would have to sign this non-disclosure agreement, and if he violated the NDA, it would cost like $1 million, and he thought that that was ridiculous, so he refused to read the script or be a part of this movie. And that's where he left it at that. And then that's where we found out about Heather Langenkamp's involvement, because people started digging further into it. And then we found out who the director is and writer. His name is Gary Tunnicliffe, who was a makeup artist for Hellraiser for the past, I think, since Hellraiser 2. He's also the screenwriter of Hellraiser Revelations.
Oh.
That's the reaction I was looking for.
Oh, why?
So, apparently he made such an impression. He's getting to write and direct this new Hellraiser 10.
So there's not even a buffer? There's not even a buffer?
So the man responsible for Mini Pinhead, Mini Me Pinhead. Now he's had to come out and they were secretly doing this movie. It's actually filming right now. Like, no one knew about this movie until all this, like, Doug Bradley and Heather stuff came out. It's actually going. He's cast a new Pinhead, because we can't let go of the character, apparently. And he promises that this is not a cash grab. This is something that it's a project of love for him. He's worked very hard on this script. And he promises a Hellraiser that we fans can be proud of. But again,
you know what is also a labor of love?
He wrote Revelations.
You know what is also a labor of love? Like, maybe it was a labor of love and science, but once upon a time, they built a house that was half in and half out of water, and they raised a dolphin in it, and his only contact was with a woman, because they were like, oh, let's see if we raise a dolphin with a person, it'll learn how to speak English, because it's got a big brain. And then the dolphin wanted sexy times, and they told the woman scientist, well, maybe, you know, give it a handy now and then, because it might learn to speak English. That was a labor of love. It didn't make it okay.
And this is why I wanted to spring it on Selena.
Oh, God. Why? Why? Oh, God.
So for our listeners, I knew that Selena is very deep and heavy in her math projects and homework and studying, and that she may have missed this news because her exposure to the internet is limited as she does her work. She's very dedicated to getting a passing grade and doing well in school. So I knew that there's going to be some news that
I'm going to cry. Passes. I'm going to cry. I'm feeling tears building behind my eyeballs. Okay, so what has turned in to, well, it was only one because we've only done the podcast, but I suspected, we've only done the podcast for a little over a year now, and I suspected it would turn into an annual warning because I love the few of you who listen to us, which does not include my mom. We're going to make a shout out to that every episode until she listens. But I care about you guys who listen, and I wanted to warn you. I figured every year I would have to warn you. Don't watch all the Hellraisers, guys. It's not worth it. There's pain that you don't deserve. And even if you're into that kind of pain, you won't like it. It is not satisfying pain. And now it's going to have to become more than that because there's another one. There's another one? Why, God? Oh, my God. Why? And there's no buffer, so he's writing it and he's directing it. So he's going to shepherd his terrible vision all the way to the audience. Oh, you know how you look around, and I'm not going to name any names because all the parents that I know are awesome parents. But you know how sometimes you're like, God, that person should not be a parent. This guy should not make a Hellraiser movie. Like, why?
There should be no Hellraiser movie made without the involvement of Clive Barker in some way. Now, the last one he had any involvement in whatsoever was Hellraiser 4. And that was just based on some of his ideas that he had jotted down for how the Le Marchand box became created, but very minimal, but still, I mean, 4 is like the last one that's like
it's
marginally
terrible.
Watchable.
It's not.
But it's watchable.
Oh, my God.
Like the stuff in France, I think, is pretty good. Like, they read the origins of the box. Like, there's good stuff to be peeled out of there. The Cenobite dog, I hate. That's ridiculous. And the fact that apparently Pinhead now has a portable Cenobite making machine. Okay, we're getting off topic just a little bit. But the point was that anything that had Clive Barker's involvement, which was basically 1 through 4, no, 3 was okay, 4 was, you can watch it and not feel bad. But the 5 through 9, they're shit shows. And Revelations is the worst. Revelations was so bad. And it was so bad that Clive Barker had to come out against it to tell people how bad it was, to say, I had nothing to do with this. And he didn't even say that for Hellworld. All the bad ones before that, he never said one word about it, never said anything. Doug Bradley was involved, so I think maybe he felt that he shouldn't say anything. But he stayed quiet. Even Hellworld,
it's not
which
the
is
worst.
The worst. But then Revelations comes out. And finally, Clive wakes up and says, I got to say something now because this is terrible dreck. And now the guy responsible for making Clive Barker come out and painfully say, this is a terrible movie, don't go see it, now gets a chance to write and direct the movie. So I can't foresee anything but a terrible Hellraiser movie.
Honestly, I think that the only way that it could be worse is like if, what's his name? I don't know how to pronounce it, that like, this guy is writing and directing it, and, like, U Bull is producing it.
U Bull.
I have to put this out there.
Yeah.
Because I've defended you quite a bit in previous things. Blumhouse Productions, if you go anywhere near this, I will disavow all love for you. I don't care how much I love Eli Roth. I will hate you forever and never watch another one of your movies.
I believe this is still Dimension. Maybe hurting from allowing the franchise.
Oh,
they
man.
Let that go. Dimension no longer has anything to do with Halloween. They've allowed the contract or whatever, the time that they had to make another movie has expired, so their rights to the franchise is gone. So maybe in a fit of despair, they pushed another Hellraiser
You
movie
know, I
into
have to
production.
say, as terrible as
But
this is, just for sheer fun, I'm really glad I had you spring this on me. So are we done with news? Can we move on to better things like The Walking Dead? Okay, because I
I
need
think
to
so.
either do that or barf, one of the two.
See, if I hadn't sprung this on you, I don't think we would have gotten
We
the
wouldn't have
dolphin
gotten the
story.
dolphin story, would we? No, I do go into inappropriate segues when surprised with terribleness. I did say give the dolphin a handy now and then, didn't I?
Yes, you did. So I think now every time I do a recording, I'm gonna have to go find some news that I think will
This can
horrify
become a
you.
new hit.
You think
Horrifying delays.
it'll be a new segment? Goad Selena into making inappropriate
Yeah.
stories.
So we've talked about me bathing with B majors and giving dolphins a handy. Now, I have not given dolphins a hand job. We've talked about giving dolphins hand jobs. I would like to put it on record. I've never even swum with a dolphin, much less had the opportunity offered to give it a hand job, which I would turn down because I'm not into dolphins that way. Moving on.
So before we get into The Walking Dead, there was season one of Fear the Walking Dead, which is the prequel to The Walking Dead set on the West Coast, which would show the beginnings of the zombie disease and apocalypse, and allegedly promised but never really, I thought, delivered on the slow burn to zombie
Well, I
takeover.
think there's still time for that. So I heard a lot of people giving it crap, and obviously because I was in the math, deep in the math, I could not watch it while it was on, so I had to binge over Christmas break, which I did, and I really liked it. I really liked it, and I think that there's still time for them to get into the slow burn because I don't necessarily think that LA is overrun right now, nor do I think any of the major cities are necessarily overrun right now. So I don't think that we're in a situation where they have missed the boat, missed the boat, so to speak, on showing the slow burn to the zombie takeover, just where they left it and who they're with and his plan to save himself, which is a pretty good plan in general, I would think. Isn't a bad plan, and that's just who they found themselves with, like escaping and whatnot into the ocean, on a boat. Thus my laughter earlier.
I guess my misgivings are I don't believe that the history of the current writing team of The Walking Dead lends itself to a slow story or taking their time with a story. And I wonder how much of that would be a reaction to fans who are impatient. And I think part of the problem with doing a prequel is that you have so many fans of The Walking Dead who know the rules. So now you're waiting for the characters to catch up to the audience. I think, which is always one of the things that is a drawback to any story when your audience feels like they're
Yeah.
ahead of the character so much and then you start not empathizing with the character so much. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good story. There was, again, I thought they went too fast to certain things. Like there was this promise of, well, one of the things we can do to scare people or scare the audience is like, because these are fresh kills or fresh dead, you don't know if the person walking behind you is a zombie
Yeah.
or just a person. But it seems like they kind of gave up on that idea way too quickly. Daniel
Who, which one was
annoys
Daniel?
the hell out of me. Daniel is the
Okay.
barbershop owner who apparently knows a lot about, I don't know, guerrilla
Yeah, he
warfare
was like a
and
torturer
guerrilla
dude for
armies.
whatever dictator they quote unquote escaped from.
Reverend. Yeah, and I think the one scene that made me roll my eyes was the last, I think it was the last episode where Daniel leads an army of zombies to the hospital because they're going to rescue Frank, who is Madison's the drug addicted son. They're going to rescue him before they're going wherever they're going to go. So they have to march and get past military personnel who are guarding this hospital. So they found a stadium that was being used to gather and hoard the
Yeah.
reanimated dead. Daniel lets them out. They follow him like he's some kind of Pied Piper of zombies, and he basically unleashes them on the armed forces, and they get this while they're distracted, get to sneak in the hospital. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I think I'm willing to be a little bit more patient with it than a lot of people have been. I wish, though, you're right. I wish that, and I don't think that they'll be able to, I wish that they were able to keep a different tone to it. Because, we've already got The Walking Dead, which feels like it's like freaking heading towards a cliff at 90 miles an hour, and there doesn't seem to be any way to turn. Which is fine, and I like it. I mean, love it. But I do wish that they were able to kind of have a different tone, like not that the shows are similar at all, but kind of a long, slow burn with a planned exodus along the lines possibly of Breaking Bad, like
I think yeah, there's a story, there's stories to tell that they seem to have abandoned the idea of a military takeover, neighborhoods cordoned off by the military. What
That whole
happens?
scene
You
with
can go.
the kid who sees the flashing in the other building, and when the mom gets out and sees, tries to find the building or find other people, she sees, the soldiers coming through and not only killing the walker, the recently deceased, but also just going in and killing people, just left and right killing people. I think that there's a lot more that could have been done with that, and
Yeah, and it's like they went from one episode to another where the military's coming in, and then the next episode they seem to have been there for a while because Travis has established himself as some kind of liaison leader for the community and the military. And like, well, I don't know. I
I
want
think that they
to,
definitely
I
should have
just want them to
taken more
see
time.
more.
I wish that they would slow down. I feel like they won't, which is
They
disappointing.
won't. And I think it leads to, and I hate to say this. I love Greg Nicotero. I love Greg Nicotero like I love no other celebrity. But ever since he's gained more power in the show, like he's directing, he's a producer, he is one of the main people behind the scenes pushing this show now. And it seems the more he's gained traction, the less the shows have focused on
I don't
story
necessarily think so. Like
and more
I kind
on,
of want to disagree with you there, but we'll save that for
yeah, I'm just seeing more emphasis on the gag, on the gore, the zombie in a tree, zombie in the sewer, and every YouTube video they put out now, like every tease, it's all about look at this great effect we did. Well, what does the effect
Well, it's
mean
a pretty
about the
good effect,
story?
but if you actually look, because I was looking up to get the titles when I was taking my notes, I was looking up to get the titles of the episodes of The Walking Dead and seeing the ones that he actually was responsible for directing in this season, which again, we're getting off track of Fear the Walking Dead. He's got some of the pretty strong story-driven ones that, so I can't. Maybe that has something to do with that, or maybe the unfortunate thing that I see a lot of in all kinds of media is, oh, fans liked this. Let's make all of it. For example, I read an article about how successful Deadpool was. So now there's going to be executives searching high and low for irreverent R-rated superhero movies.
Right. And James Gunn actually did a
I
nice
think that's
posting on
actually what I was
Facebook about
reading.
that
That's what I was
very
actually
thing.
reading.
And he was saying if executives are going that route, what they're getting out of Deadpool is the complete wrong thing. 'Cause what Deadpool is a good movie with a good story and well marketed. So you don't need to
No.
make another Deadpool. You just need to make
Yes.
a good movie that's well marketed and has good ideas and good stories and good actors
Yes.
behind it. So, Fear the Walking Dead. Obviously, season one ended on the cast heading out to sea, looking for safer shores. Now, I posted on Twitter that if they do not do zombie versus shark in a homage to Zombie, the Italian movie, it's a missed opportunity.
Seriously missed. Seriously
Now,
missed.
obviously, they unlikely they would actually do in the movie Zombie, they actually had a scuba diver fighting a shark. So that's
Yes.
an actual person fighting a shark. It's unlikely they would do that for the TV show, but
They could splice some stuff together.
they have to. You can't miss the opportunity. If you're going to be out in sea and you're going to have zombies in the ocean, there needs
Yeah.
to be some shark zombie.
Yeah,
And they
for
also
real.
need to do, I think in the last episode I talked about scenes or things I imagined in my head that I want to see in movies, and one of the things I talked about was in The Raid 2 about a guy's face being put on like the side of a guardrail on a road as a car drove by. That was always something
Yeah.
I always wanted to kind of see in an action film. In a zombie film, the one thing I always imagined from like high school was zombies rising out of the water. And that's probably something I got from watching Shockwaves, which is a 70s Nazi zombie movie with Peter Cushing. But Romero did it in Land of the Dead to a better effect than Shockwaves, where he had that kind of an army of the dead. In Land of the Dead, the zombies had kind of gained some kind of remembrance of life that you saw them doing, like the head zombie who used to be a gas attendant. So you saw him with the bell rang, he'd go out and he'd pick up the. So they're kind of like remembering, I guess, or restarting it. Don't know how exactly to describe it, but they're more than just mindless zombies trying to eat you. But there was an army of these zombies heading toward the city that had been established by the living, and they had to cross a river to do it. So of course they walked underwater. And then they all emerge, and I thought that that was one of the coolest scenes that Romero's ever put to film, where all these zombies slowly rising from the water, all drenched, and they should also do something like that in Fear the Walking Dead. Because I think that trips a primal fear of just being in the water, because that's what Jaws hit on, fear of what's in the water that you can't see, what's under you, what's swimming around you.
And having just reread World War Z, that's actually a pretty big part of it. Not the movie World War Z, Brad Pitt versus the zombies, but the book World War Z.
Which I don't think we have to say, but the book is much better than the movie. Okay, so our final, I give kind of a thumbs middle to Fear the Walking Dead. I'm hopeful. I think they have a good cast. Yeah. So what's your final say on Fear the Walking Dead? I'm kind of going thumbs in the middle. I'm hopeful. I think it was okay. I think there's promise.
I will go with I'm waiting for season two to I'm reserving judgment until season two.
As am I.
All right,
All
so
right.
I guess middle. We're still wavering. We're
Yeah.
still
So now
wavering.
we're going to get into the meat of our episode. And I think two very different views on The Walking Dead, which you may have already gathered from our talk about Fear the Walking Dead. The first half of season six of The Walking Dead, which, if I'm getting my time right, only happened over the course of 2 or 3 days.
Something like that,
Now, I didn't really notice it until someone online brought it up. But the time of the entire Walking Dead is actually only a couple of years. So Carl has like zipped through puberty.
You know what? Here's the thing, though. Here's the
He must
thing,
be on
though. You
human
gotta be a
growth hormone.
man. You gotta be a man in this new
Yes.
world. Which, have you noticed Chandler Riggs' voice getting all, he's gotten some scruff growing, he's developing the man voice, occasionally I go back and I look at screenshots of all of the family in season one,
Yeah.
and I just go, oh my God, you babies, I just want to pinch your cheeks and hug you. All right,
But
so, talking about Greg Nicotero and his increased involvement in the
and
show.
just before we get into that, I just want to say, just to set this up, we're not going to be doing an episode by episode breakdown like we did the last time we talked about The Walking Dead, because we went on so long doing that. So this is just.
That was a whole seat. This is a half seat. I have feelings. You're gonna keep us on track, though.
Yes, but we're gonna, but I'm
Patrick,
not gonna
keep
break
me on
down each episode. We're gonna break down
track. A little bit, we
a little bit, but not too
will.
much. So mostly it's an overview of all the episodes, touching on specific areas that we think are important to the show, like Greg Nicotero's involvement and why Alexandrians are just red shirts that we don't care. So please.
I disagree with you on both points.
All right. This is going to make good debate.
Okay, so here's the thing. I kind of like the chronological thing, but Patrick is going to keep us on track. He's got a little outline of things that we should talk about, and I've got my little episode by episode breakdown. So this will be fun. So to touch on the whole Greg Nicotero thing, first of all, even though it's not in your little itinerary thing,
well, I did bring it up.
You brought it up. You brought it up earlier. We're only talking about the first half of the season, so that's episodes 1 through 8. He directed only one episode, which was the first episode, which was kind of effects heavy. There was the tearaway walker pressing through the thing, but it was pressing through the two trucks in the quarry, mm-hmm. which was disgusting. Holy crap. But it was also, there was a lot of story in that, and there was a lot of heart in that, and there was a lot of, there's a lot of exposition. I mean, everything from the whole son of Porch Dick going rogue and first being like, this kid is going to be trouble. Like, just throw him in the quarry because he's going to be trouble. Mm. To when they're doing the whole preparing to lead the Horde away from Alexandria, and Carol is still being happy homemaker Carol, and Morgan, who has not yet proven to himself to be a huge fucking liability that needs to die already. clearly we're not reserving judgment on that, are we? No, but,
See, there's the problem I have with the show. It's about Morgan, but not the way you're thinking about Morgan. I can completely the opposite okay. way, which we'll touch on.
Well, but before he takes this turn for uselessness, and dangerousness and putting everybody in dangerness. Morgan is the first person, and granted, he's also from the outside. He's not one of the clueless Alexandrians, but he's the first person to see Carol. There's that little interchange where she comes out to deliver lunch to everybody, like the happy little homemaker. And he says, oh, did you know Rick from before? You used to be a cop, right? And she goes, no, no. And he's like, oh, because you're like him. You're always watching. And she kind of has that moment with him where she's like, oh, he sees through my facade. So, I mean, there was a lot of stuff that went on. The whole Alexandrian's going to rise up and murder Rick. The whole plan to lead the Horde away. All of that. And that was the one that was done by Greg Nicotero. So I don't know. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with his increased involvement is leading to more special effects gags. But I mean, just in the time going by, and it's been 2 years, and, you know, yeah, eventually bones will fall apart. But while there's still flesh and brain and sinew, these bodies are going to still be coming at you. And 2 years is a long time. So things are going to get more kind of effects heavy.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. But I think that the show has now placed an importance on the gag over telling a season-long story. They have now, I think they rushed through Terminus. They've now rushed through Alexandria.
But I don't think that they've rushed through. They did rush through Terminus. I'll give you that. I was expecting more to come out of Terminus. But I don't think that they have rushed through Alexandria. I mean, shit is falling on Alexandria hard and heavy. But I don't think Alexandria is dead. Like, I don't think it's done. I don't think it's over.
It's Alexandria, from what we saw, is now over. Now we're looking at an Alexandria that Rick is going to be taking charge of. And possibly building more in what he imagines a safe haven to be. I think they needed to stay in the Alexandria that Rick came upon and his group longer. I can watch an individual episode and say this individual episode is good and it's well mm-hmm. done and it's well written seemingly. But when I put them all together as a whole, they don't, to me, hold up. The sinew isn't there to hold it up. And that's where my problem comes in with The Walking Dead is the Alexandrians are red shirts. Rick is always right. Carol's always right. And that's where my problem with Morgan comes in. Morgan has to be right. And it has to be more evident than they did with the wolf guy.
Well,
Like, he
I
has to
don't.
be right for Carol to see. He has to be right for other people to see. Because it's like Mulder in the X-Files. Mulder's always right. I think he even makes mention of it in a couple episodes, and he's like, Scully, when am I ever wrong? Like, 99.999% of the time I say a theory, it's right. And that's how Rick and Carol are.
Well, I don't necessarily see that because there's the whole breakdown towards like the later episodes. So once Rick gets home to Alexandria and the walkers have surrounded and everything like that, and there's this part where Deanna's son tries to go over the wall in a completely boneheaded attempt that puts himself in danger and everybody in danger, essentially. When they get him back over the wall, and Tara had thrown herself basically hanging over the wall to help shoot zombies and rescue him. And he screams at her. He's like, "What the hell were you doing? You didn't have to do that." I mean, he's one of them. And she flips him off, and everybody's like, "Dude, Rick, like this hasn't been an episode, in my opinion. This hasn't been a season where Rick's always right. Rick does have right ideas, and Rick does have right plans." But where he's coming from it for the whole first half of the season, it's like, fucking Rick, get over yourself. Like, take these people. It's not us versus them. It's not you letting them live with us. It's not you. And I personally felt the entire time that Rick was basically wrong. Like, the decisions he was making was technically right. You did have to do something about the quarry because they were going to bust through and come at you, and you needed to not have that happen because megaherds will destroy you.
See,
And
but see now here's the problem though. We watched the mid-season premiere. The megaherd wasn't a problem because Rick went all psycho on the zombies and got his group of Alexandrians. This is one of the problems I have with Glenn and the show. They have de-emphasized the danger of the walker. If
this is true, and something's gonna have to happen about that. This is definitely
I mean,
true.
this town was filled.
I saw that whole thing with the mid-season premiere as like the whole time I'm watching this, and when he gets to the infirmary with Carl, I was like, don't go back to Crazy Rick. Like, don't go back to Crazy Rick. And he kind of went back to Crazy Rick. I mean, it turned out okay in the end. Because it did do something to unite them. But yeah, something does have to happen because the walkers are dangerous and they're not seeming as dangerous when you can just go out and without any training, you
Like
know.
whack-a-mole.
Yeah. So that is problematic. They have talked about there being a time jump in this season, and I kind of think that the next season or the next couple of episodes or so, there will be that time jump where it's going to basically fast forward months, if not, you
Yeah,
know,
they're gonna start.
weeks, if not
Yeah,
months,
they're gonna start
which I think
introducing
needs to
not only
happen.
Negan, but the other communities. They're gonna find out that there's other communities. That's why the whole, the promos for the series were a larger world. You're gonna get the Hilltop community, Jesus. They've obviously already talked about casting Jesus, so we're gonna see more human interaction. But like, I don't think all this had to be done in the first half of this season. That's what,
No, I think they definitely could have spread it out. I feel like
like,
similar to like Game of Thrones did the same thing where you're starting to outpace the source material, and I don't think it needed to happen. I think that a lot of stuff could have been lingered on longer to be a richer story. But like bottom line, I have to say this, maybe this is like a little bit of a disclaimer. I love this show so much that I'm okay. Like, I have gotten to. Whenever you're reading something, or you're watching something, or you're taking in some sort of creative art form, some sort of media, whether you realize it or not, for you to actually enjoy it, you have developed some sort of trust in the creator. Because you are, you know, your favorite band. You pick up their new album because deep down you trust that it's going to be good. You buy a ticket to their concert because you trust it's going to be good. It's not a conscious thing. It's not like, oh, I know that this artist always puts on a good show. I trust this is a sound investment. It's like a heart thing. So when a lot of times, for example, this doesn't have to do with horror, but the Game of Thrones television show lost me. It didn't lose me for a lot of reasons that it lost other people. Like, okay, you're gonna rape everybody whose actor or actress turns legal age. Okay, that's fine. Do that. That's fine. Where it lost me, where it lost my trust, is when they started doing things, they started having characters act in ways that were not only different from the book, but different essentially in how their character would ever act. Again, in this Game of Thrones example, which again, not horror, and if you don't watch it, you're just gonna have to follow me here. There's a character named Littlefinger. He trades in secrets and he trades in power and he trades. That is his trade. So when he is given this gift of the best secret in the entire, not even the kingdom, the entire goddamn world, he gets the best secret ever. He just gives it away for a land deal. Like that would never happen. And not only the book, but the show spent the entirety of his existence in the show is building up the fact that he treasures and covets and trades in secrets because secrets are power. And then he completely goes against character for no rhyme or reason. That's when the show lost my trust. And in this particular case, and it's only my opinion, people, you're gonna love it, you're gonna hate it. This show still got my trust. It's done a couple of things where I'm like,
Sometimes I think a lot of people complained about the season at Herschel's farm. Like, when are they going to get off Herschel's farm? When are they going to get to the prison? But I think they needed to be at Herschel Farms. There was stuff happening, even though there wasn't a lot of zombie action or whatever. Like, it was allowing the characters to grow. And one of the things I think the show has missed terribly on is Rick. And this is where I think the Alexandria story right now fails Rick himself. The major issues with the first two seasons were between Rick and Shane. Shane was built more for the world than Rick was. Rick was more standing on his morals and his conscience, and Shane was like, there is no more morals. I mean, obviously Lori was between all this, but Shane was like, there's no more conscience in this world. There's no more morals except what we decide is moral. And then we know how that ended with Shane. And then they meet the governor, which, not that I want to see any character raped just to, as a way to move characterization on. But in the comics, Michonne was raped, which is why she hates the governor. There was no real reason for her to hate the governor in The Walking Dead. Like, it didn't make sense to me. They didn't really work to find a way for her to, like, Andrea likes him, so now she's like, ugh, didn't make sense. But Rick almost lost to the governor, this tyrannical person, this evil man. And then Rick did that whole, like, this is a Rick Data, the whole Ricktatorship idea. Like, Rick never started really going down the line of becoming like a Shane or like a governor. Like, sometimes he would start that way, but then he'd be pulled back. He needed to go there.
Well, I
And I think when he
think.
got to Alexandria, he needed to be very much Shane-like or governor-like. And he himself, and this is how I envision things for Rick the character. You need Rick to come back to what he was in the first season. But for him to come back, he has to go all the way. And he has to destroy something like Alexandria for him to realize how far he's actually gone. And when he kills Porch Dick, like, there was no he there was no penalty for it except Morgan's disapproving gaze. Like
Well,
Carter
but
was
there
right.
wasn't a penalty because Andrea told him to do
Yeah,
it.
but there was no penalty to his character. Not that he had to be arrested or anything, but he was nuts. Carter was right in that one episode. He's like, why are we listening to this dude again? He was just going crazy in our streets. There was no seemingly no story area where Rick realized he had gone too far, because he wanted to kill Porch Dick, but he also wanted his wife. I mean, that was such a Shane thing to do. That's what Shane would have done to Rick if he had. Well, he did try to do it to Rick. There's no moments where Rick reflects on his actions and realizes what he's become or what he's becoming. And that's where I think the show needs to take time. Now that he's going to be facing Negan and the kind of man he is, Rick needs to have gone to a place of darkness and really come back from it and really understood what his actions meant. I mean, there was an opportunity. Michonne knocked him out when he was doing his whole Babel thing in the street. Why didn't they elevate Michonne? This is a perfect time, too, to elevate Michonne's character and give her a leadership role. Because she makes sense. She's stable. She's a badass woman who's stable. Why isn't she now in a leadership position that Rick obviously cannot, at that point, handle? That's what I mean. Like, he hasn't been penalized for these actions he's taken.
I don't necessarily think that she won't be. I mean, in whatever way, like, she's the one who has the plans now.
Yeah, I think she's...
She was the one who Andrea or Deanna was talking about, like, you know, you need to do this. Like, Rick is still, like, he's not there yet. You know, without getting too much into the mid-season premiere, he's not there yet. Like, things are still going crazy. But I think that there is an opportunity for Michonne to kind of be elevated and for him to kind of be downgraded for whatever reason, because maybe he does need to take a step back. Maybe he does need to, because I mean, his decisions are the decisions that have led to essentially all of this going down.
Right.
And I mean, talking about like what he's destroyed and punishment enough, well, technically speaking, it was Son of Porch Dick that shot Carl, which again, that's in the mid-season premiere, which shot Carl. Like, Rick is not going to see that as not entirely his fault. Like, I killed Porch Dick. I brought us out here. So I gave him a gun. Basically, you know, Son of Porch Dick shot my kid. Like, this is all going to come down on him. And I think that when things go down with Negan at the end of the season, which we're not sure exactly what episode he's going to show up in, but it's either going to be, per rumor, it's either going to be the penultimate or the season finale that he finally shows up. I think that he's going to take that blame on himself as well for whoever, whether it's Glenn or my boo, my baby, my heart.
This is another conversation. Selena and I have been having offline. And we actually on Facebook, I think a friend of yours, we were both kind of conversing with, because my theory, and I think you have kind of started come along on my theory, is that Daryl's going to be off eventually.
It's going to be Daryl. We're all going to have to riot, guys. Prepare your riot gear. I don't want it to be. I don't think that I'm looking forward to this. But the writing is on the wall. I don't see how the governor is going to kill Glenn. It's not going to happen.
Negan.
Negan. Yeah, it's going to be Daryl. Daryl is going
to be
back.
And the reasoning I gave, the argument I've been giving to Selena about why Daryl would be chosen, was that the person killed has to be someone that's very important to Rick. And Glenn has not been that character for quite a while. Glenn is Herschel. No, he was close with Herschel.
Yeah.
And but for Rick, it's either going to be Carol or Daryl. And the producers have basically said now Carol's untouchable.
Which I love me some Carol, and I don't want to see a woman, like a strong, badass woman, get killed off this show.
And the funny
But I don't want to lose Daryl either.
But
I think it's going to be Daryl. Right.
And now the teasers for the new episode show Daryl and Rick going off on a buddy adventure.
And then have you seen the Walking Dead's version of the Zapruder tape?
No.
You haven't seen this?
No.
Okay. So in the mid-season premiere, which we already warned you about spoilers, so get over it.
Oh.
There's a scene.
Is that, I think I saw a headline. I thought it was just clickbait that there's supposedly a car in the background.
There is a car. There is a car.
Okay.
It's not there, and then it pulls up, and it's there when he blows up the bikers that are Negan's dudes. And you know, like, straight up, let's real talk here. You know that set is locked down for miles. You know that if a car showed up in the background that was not supposed to be in the background, they would have reshot that scene.
Mm-hmm. Or CGI'd it out. Something, yeah.
That car is there for a reason.
Yeah.
I think Negan sees it. Negan will have seen that it was Daryl that killed his dudes.
So everyone,
Daryl's gonna go away.
Prepare yourselves. Norman Reedus' days are numbered. That's our theory. That's our bet. That his days are numbered on The Walking Dead.
I'll be so happy if we're wrong. Maybe it can be Abraham.
Ugh, Abraham, who cares?
Right?
I was like,
you know, it was kind of not cool. Like, I love Michael Cudlitz. I love him to death, and Abraham's a fun character. But wow, the way he was ready to just, like, dump Rosita for some Sasha booty, like, that was not cool. Then his whole, a man knows, like.
Yeah, him and Sasha got their own, like, whatever road trip thing they were doing, I, like, zoned out during their whole, all their talks and conversation. Like, ugh, all right, whatever, just get it on already.
Yeah.
I got into the point where I was kind of hoping that the Savior would have put a bullet in Abraham's head. I was like, oh, good. No more Abraham. All right. So there's a couple of characters I want to touch on, and one of them was Morgan. And we obviously got Morgan's story about how he went from a crazy killing loon guy to a kind of David Carradine kung fu character Jedi.
Which I liked that episode a lot, but I'm so fucking over Morgan.
Yes. And that kind of goes to my Rick is always right, Carol's always right. I think we've been conditioned that way a little bit. But I think Morgan needs to be right, and it has to be out in the open right. Like, it can't be in the mid-season premiere. We find out that the wolf guy that he had captured and tortured him with his story of awareness, it may have actually touched something in him to make him more human a little bit, bring back a little bit of his humanity, because he ended up trying to save Denise, who he had kidnapped.
Or maybe he just had a crush on Denise.
It could be, but it's still,
because she stood up to him.
But still, he didn't look at her as a thing, something to be killed or used, or that he might just end up, once he got out of Alexandria, just tossing her aside. He actually looked like he had started.
You don't necessarily know that.
We don't know that, but I think we have to assume. I think we have to assume that.
Can you read that?
Yes. Just be safe. Just stay safe, whatever she says.
Just survive somehow.
Just survive somehow, right? I think we're meant to assume that Morgan may have touched something in him. We'll never know because Carol came and took him out with a few shots to the chest. But for Morgan to mean anything as a character, like, his ideas need to be more than just he almost killed Rick and almost killed Denise and almost killed anybody he came into contact with because he refuses to kill bad guys.
He almost wiped out Alexandria, because if he would have killed the bad guys who came at him with the fire, then they wouldn't have been there to, you know, get the backpack.
Yeah. That there's got to be something in the world, and maybe it'll come with Jesus and the other communities. There has to be something within the world that isn't just violence and killing and this idea of, you know, strength conquers all. There's got to be something more. Because why would you want to live in a world? Like, if there's, there has to be some kind of hope. Some kind
of. And I get that.
Not that they actually will ever achieve it by the time the show ends. They don't have to achieve it. But there has to be that carrot for them to chase.
Yeah.
And I think Morgan brings that potential.
Yeah.
But he's, his viewpoint, his way of thinking has to be correct at some point and has to be correct in front of everybody. It can't be just Denise telling people, well, that wolf dude you let go, he actually saved my life. That's not the same thing as Morgan just being right.
I think that there's a time and a place for people like Morgan and who he is now. There is. There is definitely a time and a place. And I think you're right. I think that you're right. I think that if the world is all brutality and might equals right, then that's a terrible world to live in. I also think that in the mid-season premiere, Enid looks, they're in a church at one point, Glenn and Enid, and she looks up at the wall and she sees a Bible verse that says, faith without works is dead, or something like that. And there's even a moment where Father Gabriel is in his church and he's praying with people. And then he sees Rick and the rest of the Alexandrians coming together to fight off walkers, and he picks up a machete. And he had never done this before, not if he could help it. And the other Alexandrians are like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "We have to go help. We have to go help because, God's going to save
He
us. We're
basically
praying for
says,
God to save us, and this is how he's saving
yeah, he's
us."
basically saying God helps those who help themselves.
And that's necessary. And so I do think that there's a time and a place for people like Morgan and for people like Father Gabriel. But you can't be a peacenik all the time.
No.
At least not and be safe. If you want to go walk the world, Morgan, like you lonely samurai, that's fine. But when you come into a place where other people depend on you, you're not making that decision for yourself to never kill. You're making that decision for Carol. You're making that decision for Michonne. You're making that decision for the helpless chick who's the doctor now. You're making that decision for baby Judith. And you can't just let people go that are coming in and trying to kill you. They were coming in and killing people. They weren't coming in just raiding. They weren't coming in and saying, "Give us your shit and we'll let you live." They were coming in and killing people. You can't let them go at that point. And that's my problem with Morgan. You're right. There does have to be something more. There does. There has to be beauty and there has to be hope and there has to be human kindness. But there's a limit. And if you want to make that choice, and I know that there are some, even in today's world, there are some religions that will never, they that will always turn the other cheek, and that's fine, but you don't get to make that decision for me. And if you're living in my community, and that's the decision that you will always make, get the fuck out. That's what I'm feeling about with Morgan. And Daryl, my love, who I'm preemptively mourning, he had that moment in his episode when he got separated from Sasha and Abraham, and he got screwed over by the people. Like, they captured him, and then they're the first people to run into Negan's crew, but we didn't know it was Negan's crew. He got captured, he got away, he went back, he helped them, and they screwed him over in the end. But there's this moment where he kind of looks at them, and after they'd captured him, and after he'd escaped and come back, and he's looking at them, and he goes back to the three questions that they were asking in the prison. And that's necessary. Like, that's hope right there. There are more people out there. That is hope. And they fucked him over in the end. And God, if there is one, I hope that he's able to get back his crossbow and his motorcycle from those betraying asshole fuckers before he meets Negan and anything terrible may happen to him, because they deserve it at this point. But yeah, I love that line when they took his crossbow and his motorcycle away, and she threw a band-aid at him and she said, "I'm sorry." And he just kind of goes, "You're gonna be. They need to be so sorry. Give that to us, guys, before you take Daryl away. Give that to us." But no, so I mean, you're right. You're right. And you're wrong.
I can see that. I think, and maybe part of the issue is we ended last season with Morgan coming in and seeing Rick do his execution, and then we thought there was going to be this big thing between Rick and Morgan because Morgan comes in and is like, "Rick, what the hell?" But never that they never really expanded on that too much,
I think they might. I really hope
But
that these next few episodes kind of are more farmhouse style episodes.
I hope so, because I mean, I hope that for me, it feels like that opportunity has passed and might be missed. So I am curious. Like I hope Negan doesn't show up until the last episode. I hope he doesn't show up until like
Well,
the
they've
last.
basically already said
Yeah, I
that.
hope it's like
They've
the last
basically already
minute,
said
like he shows up and the credits run.
that would be awesome. But yeah, they pretty much said that he's not even going to make an appearance until either the penultimate or the ultimate episode. But I think especially with the time jump that they're hinting at, which might be this come tonight's episode when we're recording, or the next episode, where they're going to time jump, I think that it might give them enough time to kind of get the walkers cleared out and everything, and give us time to have a few building episodes. Because it's like, and I, this is why they still have my trust, because they do have that thing where, yes, they'll tear everything down, but then they will spend some time to build it up. And they've been going at such a breakneck pace at this point that I think that they would be smart, and I believe that they're smart enough to know this, that they need to give us some time to breathe and to rebuild. And I think that if they don't, you know, that might be the first chink in the armor of the trust, because you can't, like, it can all be dark and it can all be dire and it can all be intense, but there have to be some episodes where, while being dark and dire and intense, things are kind of building. Because it's kind of like, how you miss the sun if there's never the rain? How are you going to miss the violence if there's never anything to lose? You know, how will the losses affect you if you're losing something every time?
That is true. That is very true. So I wanted to kind of end our discussion of The Walking Dead on the one big debate point that everyone has had. Glenn and that scene, the cliffhanger scene, I've called it the jump the shark scene. If there's one scene that has made me lose faith in Walking Dead, it's this Glenn scene. And the one I'm referring to, which I'm assuming everybody's figured out by now, is where Nicholas shoots himself. Nicholas falls on Glenn. They fall to the ground. They're surrounded by zombies. You see intestines being ripped out and innards. You see Glenn screaming. So there's a question, is, are they ripping out Nicholas's guts? Or are they ripping out Glenn's guts? And then it goes to a cliffhanger. The next episode, Glenn's actor's name is off the opening credits, but they still have Herschel's watch there, so like there's a placeholder for him. And we have to wait a few episodes to find out the what happened to Glenn.
Three episodes we had to wait.
It was a huge, for me, mistake. It led to, for one thing, and I brought it up about the cigarette smoking man. When you almost kill someone so many times and you keep bringing him back, you start to lose the effect of killing someone. And Glenn is that character. He almost dies quite a bit. And this one just seemed like, this is the most watched cable show on TV. You don't need to do a cliffhanger where Glenn might be dead. So that's why I've been referring to it as their jump the shark moment, even though they don't need a jump the shark moment. Because the idea of a jump the shark moment is that you're trying to bring viewers back. But this is a kind of, now with this mid-season premiere, seems to be a troubling trend of de-emphasizing the danger of the zombies. Yeah. So you've got Glenn laying there in the middle of a feeding frenzied herd on the ground, trapped, and the only place where he might hide is under a dumpster that's on wheels. The way this show is set up, it's not conceivable to me that Glenn should have survived. Like, why would they have stopped digging into Nicholas when they reached, like, the bottom of his body cavity? I mean, they don't know that they've reached the bottom of his body cavity. Why wouldn't they have just kept digging into Glenn? And how does a big herd of zombies, just by accident, can just move the dumpster out of the way? It just, so my problem isn't so much I like Glenn. My problem is not that he survived. My problem is the way they portrayed his being trapped. Yeah. And in the world that they've set up, he should have been dead. And that he's not dead just seems like a big cheat. But then you see the mid-season premiere where Alexandria's overrun with a gigantic herd of walkers. And they survive by just like basically chopping their way out. And then Abraham and Tasha come in at the end. And our Sasha comes in at the end. And they kind of clean up a little bit with their machine guns. So, I mean, I watched that. And my thoughts on the story is, I mean, obviously they're chopping their way through the zombies because of necessity and need. But if they're so easy to get rid of by just like starting a fire, and that Daryl started a fire that attracted the zombies and they all walked into it, why not start a fire in the gorge while they're all there and they would all go into it? They made it so easy to kill them in Alexandria, because I don't think anybody but Jesse and her kids died. And one of them died by Michonne, not even by zombies. And the wolf guy, of course. So this is from me watching as a story, as a story unfolds. If they were so easy to dispose of, what was the need for the overly complicated plan to herd them out of the gorge and lead them away when you had them all in a space where they were easily killable in some form or another, whether you lit them on fire, whether you kind of slowly let them through the truck so you could chop them as they came through. You've defanged the zombies in favor of making the human element even, like, they've made the human element even more dangerous. The saviors, the wolves, Negan's coming. They're very, and even then, Daryl just took out like a bunch of the saviors. These are the people who are supposed to be keeping all the other communities in line in fear. And he, so sometimes they seem to just defang these villains too much. So that was my problem with Glenn. My problem with Glenn isn't so much that he survived, is that he was in a situation where he should have died. And maybe as a character, they needed him to die. Because it's been since Andrea, since I think like a main character has died, that's been with the group for a long time. So why not? Why not kill him? Why not go to Josh? And it would have been so Joss Whedon-ish to have actually killed him, but still kept it as a cliffhanger and kept that placeholder for his name and then show that he is actually dead. Because once we saw the placeholder, I think most of us knew that, we're going to find out that he survived. But it was such a Whedon move to tease the audience like that and then being like, yeah, he's dead.
I don't see it that way at all. this is where the crux of our whole disagreement comes from. Yeah. This is where the crux of our entire disagreement comes from, because, well, yes, I think that if they had killed Glenn, that would have been like really upping the ante and everything like that. I think not killing Glenn, for whatever reason, basically confirms that that Daryl is gone, for sure. But I don't necessarily think, like, I'm not seeing it as that necessarily complete as you. I don't think that them going through and hacking and slashing at the walkers cleared out Alexandria. I think that killed a handful of them. I don't think that them setting the lake on fire and the, I don't think that all of the walkers in Alexandria made it into the lake of fire and burned to death. I don't think that did. I think these two things, one made a very tiny dent, and I think one probably just more than clearing out Alexandria, united Alexandria, and as I've just been calling them, the fam, as in the family, into one unit. I don't think it did anything to clear out Alexandria because there were too many. I don't think that it did it made even a dent. The Lake of Fire, I don't think that that necessarily made a huge dent either. I think that that cleared out that one particular area where they happened to see that some of their people were stuck.
But then they go to that
I think
scene.
That Alexandria, no. Right. I think that Alexandria is still full of zombies. I think that Alexandria probably lost some more people, not our people, so who gives a shit about them?
Red shirts.
Exactly, you know, somebody's got to die. But I think that we probably have lost more Alexandrians, and I think that as they sort things out and, you know, if they do that time jump thing, we'll see the wall has a bunch more names and everything like that. As far as taking out the group of saviors, I think that that's going to kind of contribute to, again, an even worse end to somebody we love. And I don't necessarily think that that was quick and easy either. I mean, there was apparently some scuff like that happened. I mean, honestly, what do you do against an anti-tank weapon or whatever the hell he had, an RPG or something like that? So I think that that was one portion of the saviors. There are probably more. I think that, you know, so I don't see these as big, huge, all-encompassing. Why didn't they just set a fire in the quarry? Because there were too goddamn many. Only a portion of them broke off and headed to Alexandria. They were able to keep the bulk of them going. So that's only a fraction. So why didn't they just set a fire? They couldn't have set a fire big enough. They couldn't have sat there for days and just let one by one through and hacked them all the day. They couldn't have. Because this was only a fraction that came to Alexandria, and it was enough to almost wipe them out. And the stuff that they did to try to recover, I think, only got a fraction of that. So I'm not seeing this. I get where you're coming from. I do. And I think that you're right. I think that they need to be dangerous again. I think that they need to be portrayed as dangerous again. But for the same reason that I like some of my favorite horror movies, in the end, I can't view walkers as anything more than just basically primal animals. They have two instincts, eat and procreate. Those are the only things that they've got. Granted, yeah, the way they procreate is different than the way living things procreate, but eat and procreate. That's all they got to do. So when it comes to that, in the great scheme of things, if you're going to ask me what's more dangerous, man or animal, man, every time, because man's the one who's fucking twisted. Man's the one who, like, you know, like the governor keeps his zombie daughter, who he knows is a fucking zombie, and, you know, keeps tanks in his, of heads in his study, you know, has these quote unquote zombie fights for bread and circuses to satisfy his people. It's man who, you know, all the rumors about how Negan is and everything like that. That's all man. Mm-hmm. That is all man.
Oh, I don't disagree
Zombies
with that.
Zombies just want to eat, yeah, and procreate.
I mean, I don't disagree with that point, but I don't think we need to defang the threat of a herd to make humans feel.
But that's the thing. I don't necessarily feel like it was defanged as much as you do. And that's, and again, here's where we come to the crux of our disagreement. Yeah. I see it as we're only seeing a fraction of what's actually happening. I think that there's a lot more people in houses that didn't make it, that this didn't happen, because Alexandria was a large, thriving community. I think that we're going to come down to a fraction of people left, kind of like how at the end of the prison, there were a lot of people in the prison. Mm-hmm. People that had come from Woodbury, people that had come from elsewhere, there were a lot of people. And we get down to what? The handful that we had left?
Yeah.
Like, I think that there's more. I'm not looking at it in such, I guess, maybe in such as a large picture as you. I'm not seeing this as they did so much damage, like they've wiped out the zombies from Alexandria. Like, I don't, I see this as a tiny fraction. I think that they have definitely suffered losses. Granted, they're not people we care about, but I mean, the human heart, really. I mean, kids, your parents may tell you that the heart is full of infinite love. It's not. You can only love so many main characters. You really can. And I think that somebody's got to die, and they would run out of our folk too quick if they killed them all the time. So you're seeing it, and I totally do understand. I'm not misunderstanding you. I'm not thinking you're wrong per se, but I do understand where you're coming from, where our people have been elevated to a pedestal where they're basically untouchable. And you're right. I think that something does need to happen where it shows that they are definitely touchable. I don't think, however, that where they've gone with it is, puts us on as dire a course as actually quote unquote jumping the shark. Which may have been started as a phrase to, like, oh, we need to draw more viewers back, so we need to do this big jumping, like, we need to make our main character jump a shark on a jet ski so we can, it's this big thing and people will watch it. I mean it more in the way that it's come to be known as, this is where the show has kind of taken its downturn and starts to suck and becomes, like, a shallow shell of itself.
Right. Well, it means it does something against a normal show character because it's starting to suck, which is what,
yeah.
Now, to show you my age, I was watching Happy Days when that show actually aired. Fonzie jumped the shark, yeah. And Fonzie and Richie were fighting over a girl because Richie was supposed to drive the boat. Now, how a dude from Milwaukee knows how to drive a boat?
Aren't there, like, Great Lakes around?
It was, like, always winter or something in Happy Days. It always... You never saw
that. Was there never any sun in Happy Days?
No. They were always inside, it seemed. They're always, like, in Arnold's or in the Cunningham house or in Fonzie's apartment.
I didn't really watch a lot of Happy Days. It was before my time.
Yeah, it was
right. I can ask my mom time. About it.
That's though. When Mork was introduced in Happy Days. Mork? Robin Williams? Mork from Mork?
Oh, there was a crossover thing?
No. That's where the character was introduced. So Mork the...
I'll have to go ask my mom about this.
So the Mork and Mindy show was a spinoff of a popular character that happened to show up on Happy Days.
I'll go sit at my mother's knee and have her tell me stories of these ancient television programs.
I think there's a TV channel called MeTV now that's showing all those old TV shows.
Oh, see, out here it's called TV Land.
There is still TV Land, but now there's a new network called Me Network that does that same thing.
I don't have cable. I cut the
That's
cord.
a shame. I have to cut the cord too. It's too much money.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The things that like HBO Go has done, where it's finally broken away and you can just subscribe to the streaming HBO networks. Get on that.
Showtime does it now.
Yeah, they've hooked up with what, Hulu, I think.
Not sure. I'm not sure if Showtime has, because Showtime now has their own streaming service like HBO Go. But
One
networks.
of the major like the cable networks, like maybe Cinemax or something has done it, has hooked up with Hulu where you can pay for the Hulu Plus
Yeah, I think
and then like
Starz has. Because I think Ash vs.
okay.
Evil Dead was available on Hulu like the day after it aired on
Yeah.
Starz.
Yeah. Get on that, guys. You'll make a lot more money and a lot more people happy.
So I think we've come to the end of our long discussion about the first half of season
Yeah.
six. And
Yeah.
I'm going to assume that based on our conversation, you are very looking forward to the remaining episodes.
I am.
Mine is I'm looking forward
With
to it with
dread.
some trepidation.
I'm looking forward to it with dread because I want to be wrong, but I don't think I
See,
will
now I
be.
don't think Daryl will be taken out this season, beginning of next season.
I think it'll be at the end of this
Yeah.
season.
All right.
Yeah.
So we both know.
Gonna cry
See, you've come to
so
my
hard.
side on this one argument that Daryl's days
You
are
know what?
over.
Here's the thing, though. It's the right thing to
It
do. I
is.
mean, who's gonna give a shit if Glenn dies at this point? And it's not that I don't love Glenn, it's that there's
He's come
reasons,
so close to death
guys.
for so long that when he finally dies, he'll just be like, finally.
Well, and then the whole, the BFFs that Rick and Daryl are, I mean, Rick will care if Glenn dies, Rick will be destroyed if Daryl dies.
Exactly. Which is the point.
Which is the
And if
point.
he killed Glenn, Rick would be like, what's his name again? Glenn! Oh, Glenn.
It won't be that bad, you monster.
Carol will have to whisper him. It's like, that's
Ugh.
Maggie's husband. Who's
You're
Maggie?
terrible. You're terrible. But he does love him some
He
Daryl.
does, as we all do.
I love that bromance so
Oh, so
much.
I have one final question. This will be the final question before we end this Walking Dead episode. Do you
Yeah.
think before the season, before we get to the potential killing of Daryl, does he
Yeah.
get together with Aaron? Do you see that?
Is Aaron's partner still there? I think his partner's still alive.
I know Aaron's still there. I have no idea if the other guy is.
I think his partner is still there, and I don't think he's the type to cheat,
Eric. His name's
cheat,
Eric.
however. I do know that Norman Reedus said that he would be open to playing
Well,
anything.
I remember
I
he did
think
an
that they will
interview.
probably play it safe.
They did an interview once where he was asked about the orientation of Daryl. I don't even know why this ever came up initially. But he was asked about the sexual orientation of Daryl, and he was told when he first got the part to play it like he was prison gay. So that's how he's been playing it, whatever.
I think honestly they will probably leave him fairly asexual.
I think most of the cast is pretty much asexual. Because when you're
Yeah.
running around grimy, killing
I
people,
want
I mean,
You know
there's
what?
not
Here's
much
the thing,
time.
and this is what I don't buy. This is where my suspension of disbelief leaves me. If this was real and you were running around all the time, trying to survive, just trying to get by, dude, you'd be boning every quiet minute you had.
Like that guy, you saw the Green Inferno?
Yeah. But you would
Guy
be.
in the corner of the cage, and he's like,
You would be. You would be, dude, if you had a
Oh.
willing partner, and unfortunately, an unwilling partner, but if you had a willing partner, tell me, if the end of the world's coming, and you would be boning
Yeah.
all of the time you
Yeah. If like the
could.
plane's
There would be
going
so
down, you
many
looked at a person
babies, it
next
would
to you,
not.
is like one more before.
It wouldn't just be Judith toddling around there learning how to be quiet.
Oh,
Yeah.
and just
But I.
actually one more thing.
It
I swear this is my last comment about that. Are we really supposed to care about the flashback Jesse episodes before Rick cuts her arm off? Like, what have
terrifying.
they done with their character that I'm supposed to care that Rick's been mooning over her? So when he
Oh, well, that's the only thing. Like, you're only supposed to mourn his lost love.
Oh.
It just clears the way for
You know,
Rishon.
that's like you know the scene I'm talking about before he cuts her arm off to rescue Carl. He starts flashing to these memories of her longing looks at Rick or whatever. And I'm
Yeah.
like, why do I care? Like,
You don't care, but he
but
cares.
I need to care about her and his.
You don't need to care about her. He's about to kill her. Doesn't matter.
I know.
But this clears the way
Yes.
for Rishon.
Michonne is taking the place of, because in the comics, Andrea's still alive and her and Rick end up getting together. So I think Michonne's taking the Andrea spot for that.
Dude, and the way that Michonne has already been like kind of mothery to Carl, and you know, she's the one holding Judith when Carl's getting operated on. Like, she's already family. They
Yeah.
just need to knock them boots.
She kissed Carl before she went out to help
I
slaughter the
know, 'cause
zombies.
that's her baby. She loves him. That is her baby. Now they just need to knock boots.
Exactly. All right, so that I'm putting the kibosh on the episode because
Okay.
we've gone on very long here. And now that we're done talking about The Walking Dead, we'll go into our choice cuts. Now, I have not been told what Selena's is, so we'll go with yours first.
Go with yours
Okay.
first. Okay.
So mine is a movie called The Battery, which is an independent zombie movie made by a Floridian named Jeremy Gardner. It follows essentially two characters, Ben and Mickey, and it's called The Battery because they were on a baseball team and the pitcher and the catcher are called The Battery in baseball. So they have survived and they're traveling along and you just basically follow them as they try to deal with each other. And one of them ends up kind of getting in contact with a woman, and she doesn't want them following her because she talks about a community she's a part of, and all she'll continue to say is, "This place is not what you think it is," because he wants to join them.
Okay.
It's an excellent, it's a great movie. There's not a lot of zombie action because it's an independent movie, so the amount of zombies and gore in it tend to be on the light side. Because of I'm assuming budgetary reasons, but it's very well acted. It's a great story from the side of what two people will do trying to survive in a world where there's not too much human interaction. Like, how do they deal with each other? How do they deal with being alone? And going back to your comments about having sex at the end of the world, there's a fantastic scene which I think we would all empathize with as we kind of look on with horror. One of the characters, one of the guys is sleeping in his car and his friend is off doing whatever. He's like gone. And a female zombie, a young woman comes up to the door and
Yeah.
she's banging on the window and she's wearing like a white tank top. So she's not too zombified yet. So she's kind of freshy looking. So the guy
Yeah.
wakes up and he's going to kill her. But then he
Yeah.
realizes she can't get at him because the window, it's cracked open, but she can't get in. So he takes the
Yeah.
time to use her as a visual in his self-pleasure.
Oh.
Because obviously he has not had, we would assume, not contact with women for quite a while. He's only been
Yeah.
going around with his buddy.
Yeah.
And that kind of ties in what you're
That's
saying.
huh.
Right. And that's the original, because I watched the documentary. The way they originally wrote the scene was that
Yeah.
he was going to get out of the car and have sex with a
Yeah.
zombie. But then they realized, like they were reading the script and trying to visualize it, how rapey that is, even if it's a dead person. And they couldn't do that. Like that's like a step too far. Like they can do him masturbating to a zombie.
But they
They
couldn't make him.
have sex with a zombie. Yeah. They thought it was a step too far. It was too, even though she's dead. It's rape. It's
Yeah.
rape.
This is true.
Because in the way they wrote the script, they would have had to, he would have had to tie her to the car so she couldn't attack him, and then he would have
Oh,
taken her.
God. I have to ask I kind of have to ask the question there. Like, wouldn't, if
Dry as
you,
a desert.
okay. That's not the question I was going to
Okay.
ask. The question that I was going to ask was the question I was going to ask was wouldn't you be afraid of somehow catching,
Oh.
I mean, like, okay,
Let
you can't get blood, like you can't, like I get.
be honest. A horny guy would not think about that at all.
Are you, Are you serious? Like, tell me from a legit guy's perspective.
I'm pretty legit serious that if a guy has been gone quite a while without being with a woman, you probably wouldn't think about the potential infections.
You.
You just wouldn't. Like the when they described the scene that they were gonna do, I was like, I can see like a horny dude doing that. Especially after reading like the Tinder nightmare stuff that guys write to women. I'm like, that's actually plausible to me. Could they film it and have people watch it and not be completely disgusted and offended by it? No. The idea behind it, I can understand that.
And this is the episode of Patrick and Selena versus Evil, where Selena gives up on men
Let's
forever.
remember that Selena was talking about giving hand jobs to dolphins at the beginning of the episode.
Was not talking about myself giving hand jobs to
I'm not talking
dolphins.
about myself having sex with a zombie. I'm just saying I
I
could
asked you
foresee.
as a dude,
I'm just saying I could
like with.
foresee guys being so horny that they wouldn't care that they might get infected by having sex with a zombie.
I still just, I. Okay. I'm going to put it to you on a personal question. Would you care about getting infected after 6 months?
Oh, have sex with a dead person? Ugh.
A year?
Nah, like it wouldn't even cross my mind to do that.
2 years?
No.
10 years? Okay, maybe there's some hope.
But from a story perspective, I can under like I can understand where he was, where his thinking was writing the scene. But from
Gotcha.
a personal standpoint, I'm like, that's still a dead person. So
Gotcha.
that's necrophilia. And there is a movie about necrophilia. And it
Yes.
has a sequel. And it's on Shudder. If you have the service Shudder, the movie's on Shudder.
What is it
I
called?
think it's called Necromantic.
If any of these coughs make it into the
Yes.
final cut, I'm so
Yeah, it's
sorry.
called Necromantic. And there was actually
Okay.
a sequel called, well, Necromantic 2, not 2 original. I have not actually seen this one yet. But it's on Shudder, so I can see it. Just for a
Yeah.
quick description. A street sweeper who cleans up after grisly accidents brings home a full corpse for him and his wife to enjoy sexually, but is dismayed to see that his wife prefers the corpse over him. Valentine's Day movie.
That is horrifying.
That
Okay.
was my pick, The Battery. It's on Shudder for streaming. It's also on Blu-ray and DVD from Scream Factory, or you can Google the Battery movie and go to the official website, and it's $5 to buy it as a streaming video, and that money goes directly to the creators of the movie.
All right, so my choice is actually a sequel, but to talk about the sequel, which I'm not going to talk a lot about because I don't want to give it away, I have to talk about the first one. So have you seen a movie called Contracted? Okay, so this movie, Contracted, is about a woman who is sick and she can't figure out what's wrong with her. Different things are going badly with her, and it turns out that she has contracted an STD, and she winds up basically turning into a zombie. My choice for this, it's a really good movie. It's really, really good. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was a slow build. It's not a whole lot of like crazy zombie action or anything like that. My choice for this, however, is the sequel, which is now available on Netflix. It's called Contracted Phase 2. It is not as good as the first one. It isn't. But the plot of the movie is that this zombieism basically is an STD, and you can give it to people other ways, like the bodily fluid stuff, like if you bite somebody, they're going to turn into a zombie, etc. But this is tracking down basically patient zero, the source of the original infection that happens in season two, so or in the first one, not season two, in the first one. This isn't a prequel. This is definitely a sequel. It you know she's already got the thing, and now these are other people trying to track it down. But it is again, it's not as good, but. I liked the whole, it kind of reminded me of It Follows in this whole kind of tying sex and the the mores and the social obligations and ideas that we have about sex and sexual partners and the differences between, men and women and whether having multiple sexual partners is okay or not. So for that, I liked it and I think it was worth watching. I would at least recommend it. Again, not as good as Contracted, so go watch Contracted, definitely. But then also watch Contracted too, because I like some of the conversations that I've had as a result of Contracted too. So yeah. I'm not gonna wax as poetic and philosophical as you about it because I did not actually like Contracted
We are
2.
about to get philosophical, so don't worry. Because I
Okay.
had a problem with Contracted. And
Okay.
my problem was that the lead female, who I don't remember her name, that they kept describing her interaction that gave her the infection as a sexual encounter when she was obviously raped.
Yes, that is definitely the thing, and I was not going to, leave off my recommendation to watch Contracted
She
without saying, yeah, she's raped, so
she's
that's a
given the
problem.
rape drug,
Yeah,
and
she's
yeah, she's there's there is no doubt that she is
no.
raped, but they don't engage that in the movie at all. They just talk as
Yeah.
it's just a one-time sexual encounter, a fling.
Well, but that's actually, that is true, and the conversations that have come from this, and then going into Contracted 2, where they're tracking down the source of the virus, that, so it gets into that a little bit more, not as much as I would like, but the conversations that have come from it have been, I mean, it's an okay horror movie. Contracted is a good, it, I liked it. But Contracted 2 is decent. I mean, it's a sequel to an independent movie, so it's not like amazing, but the conversations that I've had and I've enjoyed that quite a
Oh,
bit.
good. Okay.
So yeah, so that's that. I do have one other recommendation. Apparently I don't watch cable, so I don't have a whole lot of I don't get inundated with ads for The Walking Dead No Man's Land mobile game, the way that apparently the rest of the world does. But I've been playing it, and if you guys are interested, we might be able to get Patrick to play it. Probably not. He doesn't look too thrilled about the
I'm not
idea.
a gamer.
He's not a
And I
gamer,
have been
but.
inundated with these ads from watching The Walking Dead on demand, which they show almost every, because when you watch it on demand, you don't just watch the episode, they put the commercials in. Usually you get like a minute and a half of commercial in between. They
Yeah.
always show this commercial. I'm literally tired of Norman Reedus's voice talking about the world.
Well, just so you know, in case you are interested and you do play, there's a thing where you can make a guild, and the podcast has a guild. So if you want to play with me, and I might be able to talk Patrick into it. It's not going to happen. I might be able to talk Patrick into it. But if you want to play with me, you can join our guild on Walking Dead, No Man's Land. It's PS Evil Podcast. Such an original guild name. We are badass. I'm the only member currently because I'm the only member. But yeah, so there's that. That's a little fun way if you want to interact with us and or me in a gaming situation. Beyond that, as always, talk to us on Twitter, talk to us on Facebook. We're not on Facebook as much because Facebook is terrible and won't let us post things without paying for it and let all of you see it. So Twitter is really the way to go. We are at PS Evil Podcast.
And whatever we post on Twitter does post over to Facebook. Just that
Yeah.
we find, well, I think everybody who uses Facebook knows that whatever you post on Facebook doesn't always get to every follower's feed because they want you to
Yeah.
pay for that privilege. But
Yeah.
we don't have that problem on Twitter for now.
Yeah, for now. But yeah, so we're on that. We may wind up now that Instagram has introduced a thing where you can log into multiple accounts quickly and easily. We may wind up setting up an Instagram. But yeah, so talk to us on Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes. We're on the Google Play Store. You can listen to us on Stitcher and anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you want to throw us a review, good or bad, that would be amazing. So, what are we going to talk about next
Well, I'm
time?
still kind of pulling together the details, but we're definitely going to be discussing Ty West's movie House of the Devil and the Burden of Expectations, which has come up really highlighted recently with the release of The Witch, which I loved and a lot of critics love, but I'm now seeing some pushback on the movie from people who haven't even seen it because they're using some kind of weird theory that there's so much positive reviews and love for it that they're going to hate it.
People are terrible, and I
Yeah,
hate most of
but
them.
that
The
goes.
only people I love are the people that listen to this podcast, which excludes my
Sorry,
mom.
Mom. But she did interrupt. Barged into
She
your
did
ear,
interrupt,
interrupted.
and I'm actually going to try to rush through the end of this so I can go eat with her.
Okay. So that's it.
But,
So next
yeah.
week, House of the Devil.
And I might throw something else in because I'm sure there's a movie I've thought of that I'm like, oh, everybody thinks this is amazing, and I think it's
I
balls.
saw the devil.
Saw the Devil. Which one was
It's
that?
a Asian movie about a serial killer who
I'll look it up.
oh yeah.
I'll
It
look
got a
it
lot
up.
of great
All
reviews. I'll
right.
tell you one thing. He gets tracked with this tracker that records and GPSs his movement because it's in his stomach, and he finds out that the only way, I kid you not, to get rid of this tracker is to diarrhea it out. He can't throw it up. There's no other digestive way. It has to be diarrhea.
Not just normal poo.
No, not just normal poo. They're very specific that it has to be diarrhea. So
Okay, I'll get back to you on that one.
there it is. But so if any of our listeners want to be up to date or ready for our next recording, whenever we get around to doing it, watch House of the Devil. And maybe I Saw the Devil.
And talk to us on Twitter as usual. Anywho, any recommendations as well, throw at us on Twitter. We're into those.
And go see The Witch. It's out in theaters.
All right, so I am Selena signing
And
off.
this is Patrick saying good night.
And until next time, thanks for fighting evil with us.
I've never spent much time in school, but I taught ladies plenty. It's true, I hire my body out for pay. Hey, I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Raquel Welch. But when I wind up in the hay, it's only hay. I might jump an open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine. Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.